Hillary Clinton, who is basically a tarantula disguised as Honor Blackman, and Bernie Sanders, who, as far as I can tell, is the word banksters but made flesh. And that's it. I mean, what do you do? So you just sign out of politics entirely and feel completely
unrepresented? I think I understood 60% of the words that you just said.
Yeah, I'm kind of on board with that.
This is Bad Voltage, episode 62 for Thursday, the 10th of March, 2016.
Yeah.
Hello, chaps. How are you?
Hello. Very good.
Oh, very well.
I like the fact that you said the date. We've leveled up our game.
I know, we have. Now. How professional is that?
Although, also means we have to release it on that date. A lot can happen the next 2 days.
We now actually do have to release it on that day, but that's what's going to happen, yes, so we're going to be fine. Yes, there are three of us here. There's myself, I'm Stuart Langridge, Jeremy Garcia, John O'Bacon, and Brian Lunduke, who is not here for the intro and the outro because he had more important things to do, it turns out. But nonetheless, what are we going to be talking about in this show, Mr. Garcia?
One of the things we're going to be talking about is a little bit of a Bad Voltage political smackdown, and this isn't about the rebirth of the Know Nothing Party, as you might think. It's about kind of what's currently happening with the Republican and Democrats and who each thinks going to win the nominations and ultimately the presidential candidacy of the United States of America.
We're also going to do an interview with the CEO of Pogo Linux, this guy called Eric Logan. Some of you will know of Pogo supporting Bad Voltage Live with some pretty badass workstations. So we're going to talk to Eric about what Pogo Linux is and what it looks like to ship Linux on pretty incredible hardware these days.
Jono's got a Fitbit Charge HR and a Fitbit Aria set of scales, and he's going to tell us about them.
And now, Bad Voltage.
Often we talk about non-technical things in the show, even though we kind of started out Bad Voltage with the idea of getting into other topics as well. And over the years, we've done vaccinations and guns and various other things. But we thought for this one, we might talk a little bit about the absolutely ludicrous political situation that is happening in the United States of America. So this is the current status is that the Republicans are basically down to Donald Trump, Marco Rubio, and Ted Cruz. At the time that we're recording it right now, Super Saturday was this last weekend, and Cruz got a few extra states. So there's some cracks in Donald Trump's campaign. Rubio seems to be not doing well, and he hasn't got enough votes in Florida, which is his home state. And on the Democratic side, it looks like Hillary is, in terms of the delegates, pretty much crushing Bernie Sanders, but Bernie still got the popular kind of rah-rah crowd who were still supporting him. So that's basically what's happening. And everybody is talking about Donald Trump and what this means, and that, you know, Mitt Romney comes out and starts slamming Donald Trump, and the suggestions that there'll be a brokered convention at, you know, the Republican convention. It's all very complicated. What do you guys think about what's happening right now? Because I don't know if this is normal in America, because this is my first election that I'm really properly paying attention to because I can vote now.
You know this is not normal in America.
But this is...
No, come on.
This seems like an unbelievably unusual thing. But when I've talked to other Americans, I've said, yeah, it's always stupid. It's always stupid,
but I don't know that a narcissistic, xenophobic, racist, misogynistic megalomaniac has ever quite inspired this many people all at once.
But enough about Ted Cruz.
Well, you know the scary thing. So I just saw this in South Carolina at a Trump-based exit poll that was focusing on Trump people. Exit poll of the Republican Party found that 75% of Republican voters supported banning Muslims from the United States.
Word.
A third of Trump voters support banning gays and lesbians from the country entirely.
Yep.
And a full 20%, and this is real, said that Lincoln should have never freed the slaves.
Yep. What?
That absolutely, positively scares the shit out of me.
Yeah, that's not made up or exaggerated at all. He's totally
Those
right.
Those are real
Those
things.
Those are real.
That live in the United States and can vote.
Not
think.
Some people. Not a few people. A lot of people.
One in five. You know,
tons.
It's interesting on that note, when Trump started out, right, and it was just... political controversy after political controversy, and everybody was coming out in the media and saying, you know, this is terrible. It's terrible how bad this human being is. You know, Donald Trump, he's xenophobic and he's racist, which, you know, I think we'd all agree he's a Muppet. In my mind, the real concern was not about Donald Trump, is the fact that his poll numbers kept going up.
Yeah,
the real concern points to a pretty awful undercurrent of people who live in this country.
So that's what happens when you spend 30 years telling people that all their problems come about because of Muslims or Mexicans or the gays or the absence of Christianity. You keep hammering it into people and then eventually they start believing it.
They do.
And now you've got to look at the monster that you've created.
I think they had always, not always, for the last, as you said, maybe 30-ish years, most of our lifetime, they kind of have been talking in coded words in a racist way or coded words in a sexist way.
But you're very much correct.
This is a creation of the Republican Party. And now that the monster is out of the box, they're terrified of it too, don't know what to do with it. But it's,
reap the whirlwind. But, I mean, my concern about it is that I can see why people feel disenfranchised. I mean, fine, if you're undecided how to vote, on the Republican side, you've got Ted Cruz, who's a terrible, terrible bastard and only doesn't look like it because he's in comparison with Trump.
Oh, my God.
Right? Rubio's not going to go anywhere. But then if you think, okay, so I'll go Democrat, you've got Hillary Clinton, who is basically a tarantula disguised as Honor Blackman, and Bernie Sanders, who, as far as I can tell, is the word banksters but made flesh. And that's it. I mean, what do? So you just sign out of politics entirely and feel completely unrepresented.
I think I understood 60% of the words that you just said.
Yeah, I'm kind of on board with that. What's a banksters?
Oh, maybe that's a UK thing then. It was people start when you had the crash and everything. Banksters became a word that people used about bankers if you hated bankers. That when everyone was going, oh, see, but they're still getting all their bonuses and they crashed the economy and it's all their fault.
A bankster is someone who is against the big banks then, right?
No.
It's a derogatory term for a banker, used by someone
who's against the big banks. And I've got a certain amount of time for Sanders' position on this. Just he hasn't got any other positions.
Well, hold on a second. So I just put up an article earlier this morning. Because I wanted to sit down before we did this and figure out with the major candidates where exactly they stand on the nerdiest issues, you know, wiretapping, Edward Snowden, open source and government, all that stuff. So I started looking around, which before I get into this, I should point out that none of the major candidates have an official stance on open source use in government in any way that I can find, which is kind of disheartening.
But not surprising, but I kind of wish they would.
So I went through it, and it is amazing. So on NSA wiretapping, Bernie Sanders is for basically shutting down the whole program and stopping government surveillance. Donald Trump and Ted Cruz say, hell yeah. And Hillary Clinton said, and I kid you not, she was asked about NSA spying power. And she said, well, how much is too much spying power? So there's really distinct differences here. And so I kept looking on it. Okay, on Edward Snowden, specifically as a person, how do you treat him? Bernie Sanders considers him an actual hero, but that he should probably go to court in an open court in public to, you know, since he did technically break the law. Donald Trump and Ted Cruz want him to be tried for treason and killed. And Hillary Clinton actually is much closer to Ted Cruz and Donald Trump on that. She kind of had a back and forth yelling match with Edward Snowden virtually, in which Edward Snowden kind of came out and was dogging on Hillary a fair bit.
And so he slammed her about the emails thing.
Yeah, it's not just the emails thing. Clinton came out and said that Snowden shouldn't come home without facing the music. He broke the laws of the United States. He could have been a whistleblower. He could have gotten all the protection of being a whistleblower. So Snowden got on Twitter with an article that showed that she was completely 100% wrong from the New York Times. And he said, sad to see Hillary repeat a false claim despite fact check. She could develop a real reputation. And then Clinton came out and changed her tone, and then she started attacking him because he's in Russia, and that's sketchy. And so in on a lot of these issues, the nerdier the issues get, the Republican candidates are against net neutrality with all their bones. Ted Cruz calls net neutrality Obamacare for the internet and kind of attacks it. Donald Trump calls it an Obama attack on the internet that will target the conservative media.
Clearly don't know anything about net neutrality.
It's kind of interesting. So Bernie Sanders is psychotically for net neutrality, and I use that in the most loving word possible. Like he's got voting records. He has these quotes everywhere about how much he's for net neutrality. Hillary Clinton kind of goes back and forth, but leans towards for net neutrality. And then the Apple and FBI thing, both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders kind of waffle in the middle where Donald Trump and Ted Cruz basically say we need to take down Apple and the FBI is awesome. So it's interesting looking at these issues,
well,
how astoundingly different the candidates are.
There is a difference there. But then, one candidate on the Wikipedia article about their campaign, Wikipedia published an icon, a logo of the campaign. Right? This is reasonably clearly free use. Right? This is what... this is precisely what the whole fair use policy is for. So you can comment on someone's campaign, things like that, publish, you know, a copy of the logo of the campaign. And that candidate DMCA'd Wikipedia to have it taken down. Now, was that Ted Cruz? No. Was that Donald Trump?
To be fair, Bernie Sanders,
seriously, DMCA'd Wikipedia to say, take down the logo of my campaign.
We say Bernie Sanders sent the... No, it wasn't Bernie Sanders. It was one of his staffers. And for all... Look, a lawyer that's attached to a party. There's a reasonable likelihood that...
I am only going on... Ars Technica reported on this, right? And there's obviously speculation. Yes, first of all, obviously, it wasn't Bernie Sanders himself who wrote a letter. But equally, it was very much not... overreach by some minor staffer, which was immediately corrected when discovered. They doubled down on it and said, no, we want you to get rid of that. Get rid of it now, immediately.
Interesting.
Interesting. That is interesting.
You know, one thing I find fascinating about this whole thing is it's been spoken quite a bit about how America is disgruntled with the current political system. And part of the reason why Donald Trump is doing well is because he is an outsider. He is different. And, you know, if you look at each of the previous candidates who came from the outside, like Carly Fiorina, at one point she was doing reasonably well. At one point, Ben Carson was doing reasonably well. And then they kind of stumbled over themselves. Whereas Trump has got this incredible ability to just weather any storm, it seems. And the thing that I find compelling about Donald, this is the thing where I'm curious to see what you guys think about this. Donald Trump confuses me for multiple different reasons. Like, obviously, it goes without saying, I cannot stand his perspectives on Muslims and the Mexican thing. And he's incredibly disrespectful towards women and various other groups. And I absolutely in no way condone that.
Also, Trump's stakes were not that great. Let's be clear about this.
But one of the things that I find interesting about him is
only if you wash it down with Trump vodka.
I do admire how he doesn't play to, you know, the current political class. Like, I love seeing him in the Republican debates, you know, slamming the lobbyists who are in the audience.
Yeah.
Because he's running his own campaign.
He's got balls, there's no doubt.
I admire the balls that he's got. So it's one of those situations whereby, on one hand, I think to myself, I quite like some elements of his approach and what he does. I just don't like his policies and his ethical perspectives. The thing that is interesting to me is, you know, at this point in the campaign, from what I understand, typically these candidates are playing to their base, right? So Donald Trump right now is going to be about as ultra-conservative as you can get.
Yeah.
What will be interesting to me is if he gets the nomination, it's looking pretty likely that he will, unless the Republicans try and do this brokered convention thing. I'm curious to see what his actual general election policies will be, because traditionally he's actually been much more moderate than people talk about.
Right.
Like he, you know, and so everybody talks about how far right he is, but I'm actually, well, I wonder,
you know,
he's a fairly savvy player.
Not all that moderate. Here, let me pull this up here. So even back in 2014, before there was Donald Trump running for president, he was attacking net neutrality. He went out and said, and I got to pull this quote up here because it is freaking fantastic beyond anything I could possibly dream up here. Where is it here? Ah, here it is. Okay. Donald Trump tweeted to Edward Snowden, message to Edward Snowden, you're banned from Miss Universe unless you want me to take you back home to face justice. Now, if you look back till for a couple of years before he was running for president or anything, he was sending out, not just on Twitter, but elsewhere, the craziest messages. So, When we talked last time about Donald Trump, sometime last year on this show, I made kind of mention that I kind of dug his campaign for the same reasons of what Jonna was talking about. But here's the thing. At that point, I kind of thought there was a chance it was a joke because he seemed to be doing everything that you do to be pulling a prank over on the Republican Party.
It almost seemed like a parody of a campaign.
It seemed like a parody. And so I thought there was a real chance that this was a joke, basically to get all the Republicans to vote for him by being a crazy lunatic and then turning around going, ha ha, you voted for me. Now you're stuck with this guy who's liberal. Like, I thought there was a real chance that that was happening because of what crazy guy this is. And now it's looking more and more like, He's actually doing this on purpose. He actually believes crazy. This crap. Yeah, crazy.
That's what worries me about. I'm all in favor of saying, well, you know, you got to respect the guy's integrity and everything, but you don't get points for being sincere about being a lunatic racist.
And come on, he banned Edward Snowden from the Miss Universe pageant. That's just not cool.
Yeah, but the thing that the few areas that I do admire Donald Trump, it's not so much about sincerity. I actually don't think he's a particularly sincere guy. I think the thing that I admire about him is that I genuinely do think that he is somebody who is pretty effective in business. I mean, there's all kinds of blots in his business record, but there is no doubt that the guy knows how to run a business.
There is much doubt. Almost all of his businesses have been abject failures. From money and did nothing with it. You're talking about a guy that declared bankruptcy five times. That's crazy. To act like he has a solid business record is ignoring facts.
I'm not saying he's got a solid business record. What I'm saying is that it doesn't surprise. I am of the viewpoint that Donald Trump is in a capacity an effective leader. Right now there is lots of areas where he's not been an effective leader, but I don't believe you get to the current status that he's in the world without being effective as a leader in some capacity. Right,
when you're born into an ultra wealthy family that has a ton of connections in New York City and then leverage those connections to continue failing.
I don't buy that. Just because he was born into a wealthy family doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be successful.
You're both right and you're both wrong. It doesn't mean he's got business acumen, but it does mean that he does at least have some skills and some talents and a work ethic. That's it. It's kind of like Paris Hilton or the Kardashians. Do any of them have massive business skills? I wouldn't say so. I'm not even sure they know what a spreadsheet is, but they have a good work ethic and they do have some entertainment skills. And I think Donald Trump kind of falls in that same category.
I think
he
has a ton of entertainment skills and I think he definitely has a work ethic, that's clear. But I mean, you're talking about a guy that failed so spectacularly that after his dad passed away, he got left hundreds of millions of dollars and blew through it so quickly that he had to get one of his brothers to break their trust to bail him out.
This is not a guy that's
a business success. It's a guy that's able to borrow a lot of money.
What I'm saying is that I think he's got leadership capabilities, and I have no doubt that Donald Trump has got the ability to get shit done. That's what I'm getting to, right? The problem I've got with him primarily is I think his perspective of the world and the nuance, because he doesn't have nuance, is not going to be effective in that in the presidential office. The thing that worries me is that you look at Ted Cruz, for example, who is a career politician, and Marco Rubio is a career politician, and Hillary as well, and Bernie. Mm-hmm. And I have zero faith in politicians to get stuff done. It's refreshing to see someone like Trump, but then the problem with Trump is that
He plays to hate. He focuses on what people hate, he plays off of it. People, yeah, it's the very worst, and it sucks. It's very. I mean, people keep comparing him to Hitler, and I think whenever you start bringing up the Hitler comparisons, you're inevitably going to lose the argument. But in reality, there are some distinct comparisons between how Hitler ran some of his political campaigns with how Donald Trump runs his, and not that other politicians haven't done that, but it's the things that should raise red flags for people, and the fact that it's not raising more red flags is a little concerning.
That's been interesting, because there's always been, from my perspective, at least speaking as a European and English guy, there's a slight undercurrent from America generally of, well, you know, fine, a fascist leader arose in Germany, but that had never happened here.
Right.
I know you turn and look at it and you think, do you now see how it might happen?
Yeah, and that's why, in my mind, Donald Trump is not the worrying pattern here. The worrying pattern here is he comes out with this horrible racist shit, and his poll numbers go up every single
20% time. 20% of people think that Lincoln freeing the slaves was wrong. What the fuck happened to the shining city on a hill?
The thing that really got me was when he made the comment about, when he came out with his press release about not letting Muslims in. And I, at that point, when I saw that, I thought, this is the bridge too far for him. This has got to be his.
Well, it's not just, no Muslims can come in, and the ones that are here should be labeled so that we all know who they are and can watch them, which is basically what happened to Jews and others under Hitler. Yeah. So I think every Jew and every person who remembers that the Holocaust existed, which is every reasonable person, kind of saw that and went, holy shit. And everyone else who's angry and is just filled with anger towards Muslims for, I don't know, taking their gerbs. I don't know exactly what they're angry at them about at this point, but they're so angry that they got into it. I want to actually change one topic of this. Going back to the delightful article I wrote. So at the bottom of it,
welcome to Brian Voltage.
I wanted to see, because it was all about nerdy issues, right? So I wanted to see who the nerd celebrities were supporting, who were endorsing. And I don't think any of the four of us have been really public about endorsing any particular candidate, at least not that I'm aware of. So I didn't include any of us. But I started going down the list, just thinking of just nerd celebrities. So I looked at Steve Wozniak.
Can I make a prediction about what? I haven't read your article, but can I make a prediction about who I think most people
come
are
on, it's obvious,
Bernie, right?
Yeah, it's obviously
Bernie. I bet McAfee isn't.
It's extreme. It got to the point where I had a list of about 20 or 30 nerd celebrities I could find who have officially talked about how awesome Bernie is. And at that point, I didn't find a single other tech or nerd celebrity that had supported a non-Bernie candidate, Hillary or anyone. Looked and looked, and I had to ask on Twitter and Google+, please, for the love of God, someone give me something, because otherwise I'm going to basically providing a list of this, and it's going to turn the article into a pro-Bernie article, and that wasn't the point. So I got the list down to Steve Wozniak, Edward Snowden, Mark Ruffalo, which I wanted to include because he's Bruce Banner, and that's awesome, Richard Stallman, Will Wheaton, Bruce Perens. I mean, all these guys are supporting Bernie. So the two people, the only two tech-ish celebrities I could find on planet freaking Earth are John McAfee.
I told you, McAfee.
who is running for himself.
I was going to say, does supporting yourself count?
And Eric S. Raymond, who is a libertarian, and he wants to vote for Ted Cruz. Those are the only two people on the entire planet who I would classify as a tech or a nerd celebrity that are thinking about anyone but Bernie. They all want Bernie. It is literally 100% if you take McAfee and Eric Raymond out of the picture. That, to me, is baffling, because when Obama,
you know how percentages
was running,
work.
It
you don't
wasn't
you don't
like
get
this.
To take the people you don't want in the group and then say 100%.
Well, there's two. I mean, literally, there's enough people voting for Bernie. It's still statistically 100%. Like, there's so many.
You know what's odd about this whole thing for me? I have to confess, I haven't really looked into Bernie's campaign in a great level of detail, or Hillary's. I'm not a Republican. I just find it so much more of a shit show to look at what the Republicans are doing. Yeah. But it's like the vibe I get from Bernie is he's a super well-intentioned guy, but it reminds me of when Obama first, you know, when Obama first ran and, you know, there was all of these like, we'll give you unicorns and rainbows and glitter.
Change.
And I think to myself, I look at Bernie, I just think, half of this shit is going to happen.
Shall I tell you who Bernie is, right? He's, you know, in The Simpsons, it's got that picture of old man is angry at cloud.
Right.
That's who Bernie Sanders is.
So, just out of curiosity, Jono, so you don't have a person yet. You don't have a candidate that you support at this point?
I have to say, speaking personally, and I'm putting quite a lot of it, because, yeah, it's fairly iconic. It's my first election, right?
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal for me. I don't want any of them. I don't like any of them at all.
Yeah, I get that.
Not a single person. I don't even have one person who I think, I feel kind of more aligned to you. I don't like any of them.
This is the disenfranchised thing.
Jeremy? Right.
I would not endorse any of them. I don't think... there's some I certainly agree with more than others, and I obviously don't... I disagree with maybe Trump and Cruz the most.
Yeah, but I think we can all agree on that one.
I think we all agree.
The one thing I'll say about Trump, I disagree with Jono on a lot of points, that I don't think he has a lot of good leadership skills. I think he has negotiation skills, which are a different thing. I wouldn't want to work for a company that he was the leader of.
He would be a terrible boss.
The one thing I will say about him is if this gets us as a country to reflect on what the political system has become and we get true reform out of this, I'm willing to burn one election cycle on the abject train wreck that this has become. Because it's clear that there needs to be some serious, genuine reform. And they wouldn't even need to be big things. I think term limits in Congress and campaign finance reform and a couple pretty minor things would make some very, very big differences. And if that comes to... If that's now on the table because of one crazy guy, then I'm all for it.
Well, you see, here is the thing. I would agree with all of that. I'm hoping that having watched this train wreck will cause the American political system to look at itself and sit itself down for a stern talk about what the fuck it's up to. Right? That would be nice.
That would be delightful.
And hopefully people will look at this and say, my God, this is how close we came to the Munich Beer Hall putsch. How can we stop this happening? And I'm okay with the idea of burning one election as long as we're not reflecting all this stuff from inside the smoking crater that's left after President Trump nukes Guadalajara.
Are you okay over there, Stuart? You seem to have knocked over all of your equipment.
All my equipment, but it's fine. I'm dealing
with it. What is it with you and microphones?
Because you maybe use a stupid pop shield hilariously.
But I heard speculation about a possible thing. If you maybe vote for someone today, someone who's currently in the running, I'd probably go for Bernie Sanders because I disagree with him less. I like his basic ideas. I just don't think he's going to be effective as president. But since he's not going to win the nomination and Hillary Clinton is, and she's like...
She's a politician to the bone. I was kind of looking at it. The numbers on who is going to get the nomination, it's not a sure thing at all for
it's
Trump.
It's not a
realistically,
sure thing, but the trend...
And same with Hillary. Like, it's... I think we're probably looking at like a 60-40 split on both sides, where leaning
Clinton's
towards
much
two
closer.
Candidates.
She already has 1,130 and includes 458 superdelegates, which is what's really going to screw Bernie Sanders.
But the superdelegates are changing, though. And so I agree. But yes, continue, Stuart.
Yeah. So let's imagine Hillary gets the Democratic nomination and then one of Cruz or Trump gets the Republican one, right? I'd rather jump down a well than vote for either of those two. And I don't really like Hillary. But I did hear someone say, what about something like a Bloomberg independent candidacy?
He just yesterday said that he's definitely not going to run. That would have been someone I was more interested in because he said he knew he couldn't win, and if he came in, he would take too many votes away from people that he would rather
have. Because
he actually had a pretty well-reasoned reason.
This moment, this time when people feel disenfranchised, when people feel like Jono, that I couldn't vote for any of these, this is when an independent candidacy might succeed. And if you break the two-party system, then I think that could do what Jeremy's describing, shake things up a bit. And fiddling about with penny ante shit like term limits in Congress is not the point. It needs, you know, pick up the whole country and shake it hard and put it down again. And not having a two-party system, but having independent candidates be viable seems to me like an excellent way to do that. And this could be the time when it happens. I just can't think of anyone other than Bloomberg.
If Bloomberg would have declared a while ago, he might have, as an independent, been able to get a Republican nomination. Because the one thing that Trump obviously stands on is that I don't belong to any party, but Bloomberg's made it clear that he doesn't either. So he could have almost out-Trumped Trump on that one.
He could have
Trumped Trump.
That would have been cool.
Yeah, but everyone, everyone who's voting for Trump is not doing so because he's not part of any party. They're doing so because he hates Muslims and so do they.
I tell you one thing, though. The one thing that I think... I was talking to Eric about this the other day. The one thing that I think is pretty amazing about the political system in America is that, thank God, we have this whole checks and balances system over here. Because even if President Trump happens, at least there's going to be all kinds of other bureaucracy that's going to get in the way of a big chunk of what he's going to try and do.
What kind of a terrible, crappy world do we live in where we are grateful for terrible partisan gridlock in Congress?
I know.
Because it stops Hitler buggering everything
Didn't you
up.
See the one meme that was 2016? Don't worry, Trump won't win. 2017, President Trump can't do that, can he? 2018, are you watching the Hunger Games tonight? I hope my district wins.
Brian, you haven't answered the question. Are you endorsing anybody?
Are you prepared to, on the show, officially announce your endorsement?
I have actually contributed multiple times to a particular political campaign. I think it's pretty obvious which campaign I endorse at this point.
Before we wrap up, all right, I want to go through, ask everybody to make a prediction for who is going to win. First of all, who's going to win the nominee for both of the parties? And then who you think is going to win the general election? So, Brian, who do you think is going to win the nominee for the Democrats and the Republicans?
Democrats and Republicans, I think, is going to be a brokered convention between Mitt Romney and Ted Cruz. I think that's the most likely path to victory at this point. On the Democratic side of things, I think there's going to be yelling. I think there's going to be screaming. And I think it's a 50-50 split at the very, very end, whether or not it goes for Hillary or Bernie, because... the farther west they get, the more Bernie-ish it's going to get. And the Hillary Clinton still got some big wins ahead of her. So I think it's going to about even out with Hillary.
You have to
just
pick someone.
Who
is it going to be?
I want it to be Bernie. But realistically, I think
who
what's going to happen...
Who do you think wins New York State?
Who do I think
Bernie
wins New York State?
Clinton.
I think Bernie wins New York State. And I think the reason Bernie wins New York State is because Bernie is like Larry David and, well, it's New York. And I think, honestly, that may seem weird, but he feels comfortable and he,
he's got a very New York personality.
He's got a very New York personality to him. He's extremely likable. He wears on people better. Hillary's polls are continuing to drop in most places, not fast and only by tiny bits, but his polls are continuing to gain, and by the time I think we get to New York, the same as by the time we get to Oregon as well, I think those states are going to go for Bernie just enough to even things out a bit. And so I think it's going to be a lot of yelling. I think the superdelegates are going to yell at each other and scream at each other for a month, and then a victor will be announced, and it'll be one of the two. I hope it's Bernie, but I don't
Who's going to win the general election in your eyes?
Oh, that's a no-brainer. So I whoever the Democratic nominee is will win this time around, no doubt. I think if it's Hillary, it'll be slightly less likely to win because Hillary performs worse against all of the Republican nominees than Bernie does by almost 10 points in some cases. But I think either way,
Jeremy.
The Democrat will win.
Jeremy, nominees.
I would guess that Hillary wins the Democratic nomination. I guess Trump. It's looking at where they are. It looks like to win the Republican nomination, you need 1,237 delegates. Trump has 384. Cruz has 300. But the places they're going don't treat Cruz especially well. Rubio has 151. Somehow Kasich has 37. I guess probably Trump.
And then, who do you think is going to win the general?
I would agree with Brian that with the caveat that if there is a large recession between now and the election, I think whoever the Republican nomination is wins. If there's not a large recession, I think whoever the Democratic nomination is.
That's a good point.
Langridge.
Okay, so I would like to see Bernie win the Democratic nomination because he's basically like Jeremy Corbyn, but it's a different setup there. Bernie's not being elected by the parliamentary party, so...
Who do you think is going to win?
I think Hillary's going to win the Democratic nomination. The Republican one, this is my risky play, right? I would like to see Trump win it because I don't think he can win a general. But that's a really big risk, because if I fuck that up, I might end up electing him president.
What would be interesting is if it was Trump, Bernie,
the world.
Because you'd have two New Yorkers going for the presidency, which, and it would be two really not very religious people, which has never happened.
No.
Yeah. So that in and of itself would be a fascinating election.
Who do you think will win the general?
Oh, Hillary. Yeah. Well, this is the point. If it's Hillary Trump, I cannot believe that your country is stupid enough to elect Trump as president.
So the last,
I just can't
the last
bring myself to believe it.
The last poll I saw for the nationwide poll puts Hillary a point and a half above Trump nationwide with a margin of error of, I think, 2 or 3%. So it actually could be a complete
squeaker.
Don't
forget, though, the popular vote really doesn't matter. You have to ask, will Trump win Florida and Ohio, really?
Which would be no.
So I'm saying Hillary beats Trump in the general.
What do you think, as your first election, John, what do you think?
I think Hillary's going to get the nominee for the Democrats. I think Trump is going to get the nominee for the Republicans. And I think it's going to be really pretty close in the general, but I think Hillary's going to win. I think if Trump wins, it'll be like he will eke over the line. But I think this will split the country.
And you're better off than the other two.
I'm telling you guys, Trump's not going to get the nomination. He's just
not. You've still got an English passport, right?
Oh, hell yeah. That thing's getting renewed.
You and Erica and Jack come and live here.
How could Trump not win? Didn't you hear? He recently said, I'm very highly educated. I know words. I have the best words.
I have the best words.
Best words. Yes, it's true.
Did you see in the debate when he was accused of repeating himself? And he said, I don't repeat myself two times in a row. Love it. All right, folks. Well, that's what we think. Go to community.badvoltage.org and let us know what you think about the.
I was just saying, this is a good time to get some audience participation. Definitely head to community.badvoltage.org. There's a ton of stuff to talk about here, so we should get a dedicated thread outside the show thread started about this and let us know what you think.
Absolutely. And specifically, I want to hear from people who consider themselves highly nerdy if you're not supporting Sanders, because I seriously can't find these people, at least not most of them. So if you're not supporting Sanders and are highly nerdy, I would love to hear from you guys and why, because Will Wheaton thinks you're wrong.
In the last year or so, I've been making a conscious effort to get this repugnant body in shape. As a lover of unhealthy food and booze, as well as a general disdain for exercise, this journey has not been without its stumbling blocks. There are, though, two products that have helped me along the way: the Fitbit Charge HR wearable fitness tracker and the Fitbit Aria scale. The Charge HR is your usual wristband affair. Inside it are packed sensors that track your number of steps, stairs climbed, distance travelled, heart rate, and more. It includes a built-in screen for checking your stats throughout the day and syncs to Fitbit.com with your phone via Bluetooth or by computer with the included dongle. Sadly, no Linux support for the computer dongle though, you naughty Fitbit people. The build quality of the Charge HR is good but not great. While it is a rugged band and started out with great battery life, within the first year of using it, the outer layer of the band has come loose and the battery life for each charge is notably reduced. It is, though, a well-executed, good-looking and very functional band. It is comfortable to wear, the screen is always handy to check your progress, and it even displays and vibrates when incoming calls come in so you never miss, for example, your wife asking you to get even more groceries from the store while you're out. The Fitbit Aria is the other player in this game. Put simply, it is a scale that you stand on to measure your weight and body fat, and it syncs the results wirelessly to your Fitbit.com dashboard. This is handy for weighing yourself every morning to see your weight and fat loss progress. Now, could you simply type these two measurements into the dashboard? Sure, but this is a device of convenience as opposed to function. Like the Charge HR, the Aria is a good-looking, sleek, and well-executed product. Also like the Charge HR, though, I had some quality issues with it and had to have the first one replaced. What is clear from this is that Fitbit seem to have something of a quality control issue in the build of their products. It's all a bit weird, though, because when you get these products, they feel rock solid, but as time goes on, it just seems some bits drop apart. I really hope they tend to this in the future, because I really rather like what they do. Now, while it's easy to focus on the hardware, the real value is the comprehensive Fitbit dashboard at fitbit.com. It provides all manner of graphs and visualizations for the data gathered from the devices. While I'm sure that it's not as comprehensive as some other nerdy options that Jeremy's almost certainly going to compare it with, the Fitbit dashboard nicely shows you the most critical data and patterns you might want to see. It tracks your weight loss. It's able to detect the kinds of exercise that you do and the number of active minutes. It tracks your sleep and how restless you were, as well as tracking your resting and active heart rates. The dashboard also provides tools for tracking water and food consumption, and even badges and challenges to make getting fit more social. Overall, I rather like my Fitbit setup. Outside of the build quality issues, I found my Fitbit gear to be reliable, and the dashboard has helped me to stay motivated as I hit my fitness goals. I just wish the Fitbit world was a little less closed. For example, I'd like my Polar H1 chest strap and other devices to sync with a Fitbit dashboard. Linux support would be nice, and it'd be great if they supported Google Fit. So, what is the bad voltage verdict? If you want a decent consumer fitness platform, you can't really go far wrong with the Fitbit Charge HR and Fitbit Aria combo. Sure, there's some kinks along the way, but overall I'd recommend this to any of you wanting to get in shape.
So let me ask you this question, Giano. How much more fit are you today than you were a year ago?
Ah, no, it's interesting you say that. I actually went for my medical about 2 months ago, and I got the results last week.
Nice.
Actually, no, it was way shorter. I went for my medical like a month ago. And I'm noticeably fitter. My doctor actually said, when she went through the results, she said, "Have you been exercising?" with a look of surprise on her face.
Really?
And so it turns out that my fitness
Results. How did she say it specifically? Was it like, "Have you been exercising?" or more of a, "Hey, have you been exercising?"
No.
Do you work out often? Your arms are so hard and strong, Jono.
Are you made out of marble? Yes.
Marbles.
So, do you attribute to these two devices, or does that just happen to be the case?
I think there's a few things. So like, this is not an empirical study, because I've also been... She gave me, when I did my previous medical, she said, "Look, I want you to take vitamin D supplements and fish oil, and I have this methacobalamin shot every couple of weeks." Like, there's a few like different pieces that
I don't fancy being injected with whatever that stuff is. What do you need vitamin D for? You live in California.
Yeah, those are both odd things.
I just have my body has a deficiency with vitamin B.
No, I get it. So, up in the Pacific Northwest, everyone takes vitamin D. It's just a thing.
A question about this. The Fitbit devices as a general concept, I think, are great. Why is the Charge HR any better than the Fitbit One or the original one that came out? You know, I mean, they sit on your wrist and they track the stuff, and then all the cleverness is in the dashboard and so on. Why buy a newer device?
So I've tried almost all of the Fitbits.
Yeah.
The Fitbit One, the downside with that is it's a little, it looks like a little, it's like a tiny little device that you put in your pocket or you fit
into the wrist,
like a band that goes around your wrist.
Yeah.
And I've been through, Eric and I together have probably been through 4 or 5 of them, because you lose them. Like, they fall in the loo, they fall out your pocket, whatever. It's harder for women as well, because a lot of women don't have pockets in their clothes.
How many have fallen in the loo for you?
We've flushed at least two of them. We've flushed at least two of them.
Hang on, bear with me. You wear the wristband. I mean, fine, I understand. If you've got the tiny little bullet thing and you just leave it rattling around in your pocket, then yeah, you're going to lose them. So
the Fitbit One... I don't know if you can get a wristband for that. You have a little thing that clips into your belt and it always falls off.
The one I'm thinking of then is the one with the wristband. It might be a Flex. I can't keep up with those stupid marketing campaign.
The difference between the Flex and the Charge is that the Flex originally didn't do sleep tracking, and then they added that to it. So Erica wears a Flex. She can't wear a Charge because her wrists are too small and the the charge is too big. So
do the names of these have anything to do with their functionality? Like, does the flex flex more, and does the charge more?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
So
the charge and the charge HR does the heart rate tracking, which I really like. You can get the charge, which doesn't do the heart rate tracking, which is basically a flex that also did sleep tracking. So the difference between the flex and the charge isn't that significant. The charge has got a screen built in.
So how do both the Fitbit on your arm and the scale sync the data up? Does it have to go through a computer application that runs on Windows or Mac, and that's the only option, or?
No, you can sync it with your phone. They don't support all phones, though, weirdly. So, you know, the major Android and Apple phones, you can basically install the app and then it does it over Bluetooth. But there are some other phones that are, at least the last time I checked, aren't supported. And that's how I usually do it. You know, it just periodically syncs it. The scale does it over Wi-Fi.
Okay, so directly. It just connects to you. Yep. So is your scale plugged into the wall? Like, is it?
Nice battery, and the battery lasts forever.
Really? It's similar to the scale that I reviewed like a year ago or whatever it was.
Yeah. How do you teach the scale about your Wi-Fi network? Do you have to use the companion app, which is only available on Android and iOS?
You can do it, if I remember right, it's been a while now, but I think you can do it through the website and the app. I can't remember exactly.
My basic question is, if you don't have an Android or iOS device, in practice, you can't use the wristbands because there's no way to
use the dongle. It comes with a dongle that you can plug into your laptop.
But the dongle is only Windows and Mac, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
if you're a Linux user, you don't have a cell phone, then you're out of luck.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not going to buy one. So is there any way that this data can be configured so it goes to like a local database or anything like that instead of connecting up to the Fitbit services?
Now, this is the hole in the Fitbit side of things. As I mentioned in the review, it is definitely a closed ecosystem. I think I filed this issue. The very first GitHub issue I ever filed was years ago, which was support for one of the Fitbits on Linux. Someone had got one of the Fitbits working like a Linux driver, but they were basically like, you know, looking at the Bluetooth traffic and trying to, you know,
reverse engineer it.
So this is the downside of the Fitbits is, the data goes to Fitbit.com and that's basically where it is. They do have an API that developers can use for building Fitbit support into their apps.
Okay.
But as I mentioned in the review, I have a chest strap that I use, Polar H something chest strap, and that can't talk to the Fitbit thing, and I can't get the data from Fitbit into other services as well. So,
dude,
like more and more people are using Google Fit.
Wait a minute. Okay. So let's put aside this really cool product that is cool if you want all your data only up in the cloud and owned by a corporation who knows how often your heart beats. So let's focus for a minute on how many health gadgets John O'Bacon has. So you've got a strap that goes around your chest. You've got another strap that goes around your wrist, and then you've got a platform to stand on. Are there any other health nerdy gadgets you have?
Gadget wise, not really. The reason why I got the strap is because, when I went to the doctor, and my doctor is an expert in preventative medicine, right? So she was saying, I want you to work out 3 times a week and get your heart rate over 140 BPM. And I looked into it. And the when you track your heart rate from your wrist, it's a lot less accurate than from your wearing a chest strap. So I got the chest strap.
Oh, okay.
So basically, when I'm on the elliptical and I'm exercising, I keep it above 140. But the
does your chest strap communicate over Wi-Fi or Bluetooth as well, or is that a different thing?
That's Bluetooth.
Okay.
Now, to be clear, it is fantastic that you're doing this, and well done, pal, and everything, but that is the most transparently self-serving justification for your pathetic gadget habit that I have ever...
I believe getting healthy is a reasonable justification.
Yeah.
And the thing is... In the defense of the chest strap as well, we have an elliptical trainer in the house, and I was getting on it and doing 20 or 30 minutes, and I was thinking, yeah, that was good. And then I put this strap thing on and look at the number and keep the value over the 140. And I found myself working a lot harder to kind of keep it over that. So I feel like if you're going to spend 20, 30 minutes exercising, I hate exercising, you might as well make it worthwhile.
Yeah.
The reason why I like the reason why I got the Charge HR is because I wanted the heart rate tracking for the resting heart rate. So You know, as an example, my resting heart rate, which is a good indicator of heart health,
1 million
was 81 about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I've had a reasonable kick at the health thing in the last couple of weeks, and it's now gone down to 70. And it's really nice seeing that progress. It's really nice looking at the dashboard and seeing,
cool.
You know what?
That's cool.
If my life is going to suck, at least I can see a graph going down.
One of the things I like about the Fitbit people, I got my mum a Fitbit, and they give all these essentially what amount to being achievements, right? So she'll get an email which says, you've now walked all the way from your house to Caracas and back or something. And she thinks it's brilliant. She always keeps sending me an email saying, look at this, look, isn't this fantastic that I've done this? And every day she checks, she's done her 10,000 steps and everything. They've done a really good job of this kind of, it sounds like trivial gamification, but it's actually really quite fun to do. It's just a shame that you have to ship everything up to Fitbit to do it.
Yeah, they have like these challenges, which I've not participated in one yet, which is basically where you can, you know, you can be friends with other people who use Fitbit, and you could say, within my group of 5 or 6 friends, we're going to have a challenge this one day, which is who can get the most steps, or who can do this, who can do that. And they've got like a whole system for doing that as well. So they're doing pretty nicely, but it is a closed ecosystem.
Hey,
no doubt about
that. Jeremy, you're kind of a fit dude. Do you have a Fitbit?
No.
Do you have something like a Fitbit? Would you track your heart rate and stuff like that?
I do not. I mean, the smartwatch does it a little bit, and I more track my times for running and reps and stuff like that. I don't really. I do have the Withings scale, which does resting heart rate, so I do it once a day, but not on an ongoing basis. As much as I work out, I don't really track the metrics as much as I do. Use MapMyRun for my runs, but that's about it.
Okay. How about you, Stuart? Do you do this sort of thing? Like, do you track your heart rate?
I used to have the Fitbit Flex and pay attention to the 10,000 steps thing and everything, but it broke and I never got around to getting a replacement.
He has the new Fitbit Crisps, which tells you how many crisps you've eaten per day.
The one thing I would say that I was suspicious of with any kind of, I did quite a lot of research into getting a wristband. And I was looking at like the jawbone ones and various other things. The one thing that's nice about the wristband is that I was expecting there to be a ton of false positives in terms of the steps that you take. You know, like if you basically sit there waving your hand around, you're going to get a load of steps. And it actually, you can sit there and wave your hand around and it doesn't count them.
They're pretty good with it now. I'm told that
they are pretty good with it.
Early ones did have that kind of problem. In the same way that if you don't have a Fitbit, but instead use one of the tracking apps that just lives on the phone and works on the accelerometer or whatever, the magnetometer, then they're quite unreliable. But now the wristband stuff's all fine. I mean, there's a guy I know here, Dan Nunes, his name is, who's basically got all of these. He's got like 6 wristbands or whatever. And understands which ones are good for which things. Which he's a fairly serious runner, same as Jeremy is. He can tell you all the differences between them, but I think just having something which does this is a good idea. It doesn't really matter what it is.
Yeah, and that's why I think the dashboard is the most valuable piece, and it does change your habits. Like, I was very, very cynical about having any of this stuff.
Yeah.
Because I kind of joked about it in the intro of this. I really do not like taking care of myself. I love unhealthy food. I love booze. And I love lazing around. I don't like exercise. I don't enjoy it. I don't feel like Erica. If she doesn't exercise 2 or 3 days a week, she feels weird. Her body like rejects not being able to exercise.
Oh, if I don't exercise 4 times a week, I feel terrible.
Really? Yeah,
I don't have that problem.
What?
Yeah.
I think paradoxically with these kinds of devices, they're almost better for people that are either not fit or trying to get fit, as opposed to people like, I already run every day, so I don't need the motivation.
Yeah, exactly.
Realistically, Jeremy, you don't really need to go, I must track whether I'm meeting my targets. You go out and run every morning, you're fine.
Right. And honestly, I don't need this thing. And I'm guessing Stuart doesn't either, because I don't need a device to tell me I've only walked 12 steps today. So that's just not necessary.
So now on the show, we've got Eric Logan, who is the CEO of Pogo Linux Systems. How are you doing, Eric?
Good. Very good.
Awesome. Well, so just to provide a bit of an introduction here, we first really got to know Pogo Linux when we did the very first Bad Voltage Live, and Pogo very generously contributed a workstation just out of the blue, just showed up and says, hey, you know, we think the show is going to be cool. We'd like you to donate a workstation as a prize, which was awesome. And then
so we reached out to Pug. Let's be clear about this story here. It wasn't just out of the blue. It was just like when we were there at the conference. Like we were getting ready for the show and Pogo Linux just shows up and be like, by the way, we brought this. Wanna give it away? It's badass. And we're okay.
All right. So amazingly,
Jeremy's still using it.
Not true.
That is completely unfair and untrue.
And then amazingly, we reached out to Pogo again and said, would you be interested in donating a prize? And Pogo hadn't learned its lesson and donated another workstation for this year's Bad Voltage Life. So thank you, Eric, for your generosity. Appreciate it. This is going to seem like a silly question, but tell us what Pogo Linux does. I mean, you're obviously selling hardware with Linux running on it, but why should people buy your hardware and your systems as opposed to going somewhere else?
So that's a great question. So first of all, thanks guys for having me on. I really appreciate it. The Linux marketplace has matured a lot over the years. And in general, when we first started out, we helped a lot of customers out with things like, how do we get systems to work with Linux from just basic driver support and things like that? We spent a lot of time compiling drivers, other things like that. But over the years, a lot of that stuff has become mainstream and the hardware support's become much better. So these days, what we focus on is things like the storage market, where you have all these new technologies coming out, like solid state disks, future technologies like NMD, and those sorts of things, where customers really they don't know what works well and what doesn't in Linux environments, and they have a hard time kind of navigating through that. So that's basically what we help them with.
So you said when you got started, what I don't think many people maybe will know is that you guys were founded in 1999, which for a Linux hardware company is quite a while ago. Quite a few Linux hardware companies, some of them very large, have come and gone in that interim. What do you think sets Pogo apart as one of the companies that's been allowed to kind of weather the storm and a couple tumultuous financial years in the interim there? And just a lot of things have come and gone in that time. Why has Pogo stayed?
Well, we've always kind of focused on specific things. Like we have a motto that is, we don't sell crap. And that's been
is that an official motto? Like, do you guys have like carved into like wood and a really ornate sign or something?
Big letters, right?
That's such a great motto. Yeah.
But I mean, it's true because technology come on in, and it's important to give people technologies that are cutting edge, but also work for them in their environments and are mature. So that's a big thing. But the other part of it is embracing things that are new that other people may not have. Like, for example, when SATA RAID came on the market, there were a lot of people who didn't embrace that, and we did, and that was very helpful to keep us going. Software-defined storage is another one as well. So I would say it's really just kind of keeping on the cutting edge of the market, but at the same time offering people a good product.
I was going to say, like, in the 16, 17 years that you've been going, how is the experience of shipping a Linux computer different? Is it easier these days to get good support for hardware and to deliver like a good integrated system? Is it easier these days than it was back in 1999?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I can't even begin to describe the what it was like trying to integrate Linux hardware in 1999. It was, we were shipping Red Hat 7.3. It was very, very hard. But so there was just basic problems back then with just getting things to work. We had to spend a lot of time in the software. These days, we have a lot better support from the industry in general as far as hardware. So now a lot of it really comes to the front part of it, where it's figuring out what customers need and what really needs to go into these systems. That's still a challenge, like I said, with a lot of these new technologies. For instance, in the case of SSDs, where you basically have something that's a fundamentally different technology, you just got to figure out and help customers get through that.
So, a question there. you sell hardware, but no one buys hardware anymore, right? Everything's just in the cloud. I mean, presumably you could sell things to Amazon. But are you seeing a big turndown in terms of people buying servers and storage servers and that sort of thing, precisely because everyone just spins up a million Rackspace instances now, or has that not affected you particularly?
No, I mean, it's definitely changed our market a lot. I completely agree. I mean, a lot of our revenue before came from basically general purpose servers. And a lot of people are doing general purpose in the public cloud now. That's a big change. So a lot of our focus has come around storage now, because a lot of people still need on-premise storage. They can't outsource all of that. They need a large part of it internally. So that's a big part of it. And a lot of our customers are actually smaller ISPs offering cloud services, but in very specific markets, let's say, like a e-discovery or something like that.
Well, I see. So you've got, if people are doing on-site storage, which a lot of companies are still going to do, obviously, even ignoring the whole confidentiality thing, it takes time to ship everything up to the cloud and back down again. So you're selling lots of people on-site individual storage servers.
Mm-hmm.
Right, okay. And that market's going up.
A lot of it's just getting stuff back and forth. Then there's the privacy concerns. There are specific things where people just don't want it or just can't have it off premises. And then there's the whole private public cloud hybrid situation where we have some people have some stuff in the cloud and some locally in a private cloud, but they still need hardware to put that private cloud together.
And how do you, I mean, you're up against some pretty stiff competition, right? I mean, there are lots of big companies like Dell who are selling hardware. Mm-hmm. Pogo is obviously a much smaller player in the wider kind of hardware
right.
world, but a bigger fish in the Linux world. How do you compete with companies like that?
Well, we try not to compete directly against them. I think that's the big thing, right? I mean, if you go up directly against someone like Dell, it's very difficult. So one of the things right. is that it's the customization part of it. And I think that's the piece that kind of encompasses everything. It starts with custom hardware. So we have a lot of options that someone can't get from Dell. And we do that because there's a very strong channel for Linux hardware out there. And then the other part of it is the customization point. A lot of our customers are high touch. They have specific needs, whether it's from a support standpoint or from a logistics standpoint. And it's just something they can't get from someone like Dell. So
Gotcha.
We have a lot of these customers that are extremely loyal to us because of the things we do to us, because they just can't get that sort of support and customization from someone like Dell.
Gotcha. So kind of on that customization point, I see that you guys support CentOS, Ubuntu, Debian, Scientific, and OpenSUSE, and then offer RHEL, which obviously gets support from Red Hat. How are you kind of seeing the breakdown on requests on those distros, and is that shifting over the last, say, 2 years, or has it been pretty stable?
So a lot of our systems go out with Cent. That's probably the most popular. It has changed over the years. To be honest, we don't sell a lot of commercially supported Linux, and I think that's mostly because that's just a different target market than what we're providing. You know, we're working with the tinkerers. We're working with the people who are doing something extremely custom, and so they're not the mainstream Linux users in that sense. But it definitely has changed. I mean, many years ago it used to be all Red Hat, and now it's pretty much almost entirely shifted.
Gotcha. Well, Eric, we really appreciate you coming on the show. It's, you know, I think...
Wait a second. I have one follow-up question here.
All right, go on, get it in, Brian.
Servers are great. Servers are fun. Servers pay a lot of bills. But your workstations are bonkers insane. And I wanted to actually ask you a question about this. So I'm looking here at one of your workstations. If you go to pogolytics.com, you got workstations there. You got a whole bunch of preset towers and just these mega huge water-cooled towers. You can actually configure through you guys a system with dual 18-core Xeons and a terabyte of RAM. Do you actually have people ordering that? Because if so, that is so crazy baller. I'm just curious if that's just something hypothetical and it does work, but no one buys it, or do people actually buy that? Because it's amazing.
You'd actually be surprised. So one of our number one selling workstations is something we call the Compute Cube. And it's this giant cube. It's a dual processor Xeon water-cooled system that's virtually completely silent that you can, like you said, put almost a terabyte of memory, actually put a terabyte of memory in. And people will literally buy these systems fully loaded, and they will be in, like, it's a workstation that will be sometimes like a $15,000 workstation.
That is so awesome.
Who the hell needs a terabyte of RAM? That's nuts.
I assume it's for, like, you know, mathematical and scientific computing stuff, but awesome.
KD Neon. Well,
maybe a little too much grant money. I don't know.
Incredible. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, and thanks again for the support of Bad Voltage Live. You know, we didn't just want Eric on the show because, you know, they've helped us out, but just because, you know, we want to support companies like Pogo Linux doing that kind of stuff. So keep up the good work, and we'll hopefully speak to you soon.
We have them on the show because they ship a piece of hardware that can have a terabyte of RAM. That's the line. If you want to get on Bad Voltage, you have to make a workstation that has a terabyte of RAM. End of
story.
True
dat.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks. There we have it. Another show in the can. Fewer segments, but longer segments. That political one went on a bit, didn't it?
It did go on quite a bit.
But there's a lot to get through.
There is, though, quite a lot to talk about. I mean, this is whoever wins this is going to be the person who ends up running most of the world. So
I saw a thing on Twitter the other day saying, you know, with all of this politics going on, you know, I need a lighthearted break from the current political system. So I'm really happy that House of Cards has now been released on Netflix.
That's definitely, as long as it was one of those segments where one of us, all of us, I'm sure, invariably had things we wanted to say but didn't, and it's going to so it's going to be one of those segments you listen to when it comes out weird, because you're like, why didn't I say this? But it's already 35 minutes or something, which is almost double what we were aiming for, so that's tough.
We're not good with clocks.
Although it is good to see that you once again got a review in of a product over a year old, so that the trend continues.
Well, ideally what would happen is a thing comes out and then one of us buys it. It just doesn't work like that. What persuaded you to buy this one now rather than... Because you had a bunch before. Is it just because you lost them and decided to upgrade?
They all went in the loo.
Yeah, well, I flushed a couple of them. Yeah, flushed a couple of Fitbits, which is not... It's not a good day when you flush a Fitbit.
I can't.
I had one that fell in, and it fell in at the most inopportune moment. It was not a good falling in. I don't want to paint too vivid of a picture, but I had to go and get some of my... I wear these gloves when I barbecue. I had to put my barbecue gloves on.
Note to Fitbit marketing idea: the next one should be called the Fitbit Flush.
And they just released two new ones, which seem in no way compelling whatsoever. So,
well, this is my question, right? The Flex, the one that I had and that my mum's got, just seem perfectly simple. You've got the little bullet thing and it goes in the plastic wristband and then you just wear it and that's it. I don't see why you need more product after that.
Yeah, the one thing, it does do some magic. Like, one of the things that I kind of dig is it can detect what type of exercise you're doing. Like, Eric and I'll go for a walk, you know, for an hour or whatever, and it'll say, you were walking, and then I'll get on the elliptical train, it'll say, you were doing the elliptical train. Every so often it gets it wrong. I was playing guitar the other day, and it thought it was rowing or something.
But it knows elliptical versus running?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and they must have some crazy, like, wicked data scientists who work there.
That sounds like the most heuristic-y of heuristic jobs, doesn't it?
Working
that stuff out.
It's massively transformational.
I wonder, presumably they have a whole bunch of people who tag the exercise they're doing. Like, when it lied and said you were wrong when you're playing the guitar, did you correct it?
You can go and change, these different
did
things.
Did you correct it?
Did I?
Yeah, because no, that seems like that would presumably feed back into the process, right?
Yeah, the one thing that is pretty cool is the sleep tracking as well. Like, you know, and it automatically detects your sleep, and that's actually really helpful. It turns out I never get enough sleep ever.
I will say I don't use a wristband, but I did buy the Y Things that's called the Aura. So it, instead of like this, you have to wear this. Actually, is a thing that slips in between your mattress and your box spring. So it mentions
that's cool.
It does like resting heart rate, temperature, motion, and then it judges what stage of sleep you're in. You know, deep sleep versus light sleep versus REM, based on a whole bunch of parameters and stuff.
How does it do? How does it do resting heart rate when you've got a mattress in between your pulse?
I don't know, but it's pretty close.
Really?
Because like I said, I monitor it every day, so I know what I am normally, and you can actually tell when I'm moving. It goes up, and it gives you some pretty cool metrics. Yeah, it's an interesting product. Actually, maybe I'll have to review it one of these shows.
Yeah, does it do it for two people? Like if you're late,
so it comes with one. I forget what they call it, but basically one sensor, and then it's also an alarm clock. So you can buy a second one and put it on the other side of the bed. The other thing that's cool is you can say, okay, I have to get up at 8 o'clock at the latest. But if I am in a very light sleep at 7:40, wake me up. Huh. So you can give it an amount of time you'll wake up.
That's clever.
It's interesting.
Assuming you've got a heart as big as all outdoors so it can hear you. But,
yeah. There you go, people. This is a fitness pack show. do we have anything else?
Someone did actually ask us, did you see that Microsoft have released SQL Server on Linux?
Did.
I did not see that.
Which is, you know, genuinely quite surprising, I think.
Really? Have Borland released Turbo C++ on Linux as well?
Really? That's your answer? SQL Server is like the third most popular database server in the world.
I know. I'm just bagging on Microsoft. That's cool.
It is. I mean, Microsoft loves Linux, apparently, although specifically their server team loves Linux and their desktop and mobile teams really, really hate Linux.
Yes. But it's definitely, I think, a sign that Microsoft genuinely is changing internally. And a company that big, obviously, it's going to take... different divisions are going to accept Linux at a different rate, which is clear. But
it's all a good sign, right?
I think the server and cloud divisions really have looked at it and gone, okay, the thing to do here is instead of having a pop at these people or treating them as the enemy, why don't we just work with them? We're more than happy for people to continue buying SQL Server licenses. They want to run them on Linux. Fine with us. We don't care. We still sold them SQL Server.
Yeah, I wonder whether the decline of the Windows business, because I presume it is in decline, with so many people moving over to Apple. I'm wondering whether that's played a
That won't play a massive role in it, because the division who are responsible for that kind of thing haven't embraced Linux at all. And this is all server and cloud stuff. And
What I'm saying is that, like previously, right, you had to run SQL Server on Windows, right? Windows Server.
Yes.
Right. So what I'm saying is if Windows decline is happening, they would have segmented it across desktop and server as well. If Windows decline is happening on the server side of things, then, hey, that's how the market works. You should move over and support
Yeah, totally, absolutely. I'm completely in agreement with that. I just don't think Microsoft are losing server share to Apple, because Apple don't do a server.
I mean,
Windows desktop, they'll be losing out to Apple.
To Apple,
but
yes.
They're almost certainly losing out on the server side to Red Hat and Oracle.
Yes, they are, absolutely. Which is precisely why they're taking their server products and making them available on Red Hat, on Ubuntu, whatever.
Yeah.
Precisely, and their developer stuff still too, sell which is product. Obviously more desktop oriented, but the fact that they have any version of Visual Studio that runs on Linux, I thought was also surprising. And it's
VS Code.
Yes,
VS Code is not Visual Studio. It's a text editor. It's like Sublime Text or Atom or whatever.
But it's a version technically. The full studio does not run on Linux, but
yeah,
it's part of the Visual Studio brand.
It's more that division of the company.
Yeah, no, okay, no, fair play. But yeah,
Built using Electron.
Yes.
Which is very cool. So
Electron is very cool. Atom, not so much.
So do you think that this will get any serious kind of uptake?
This cat.
Do you think you'll see a significant amount of people deploying MSSQL on Linux?
Oh, MSSQL. I suspect that you will certainly see people who are currently running a kind of a... I'm short of vocab here. A mixed Windows and Linux network now being able to say...
I believe they call that a hybrid environment these
hybrid
days.
Hybrid environment, yes, is the phrase yes. I'm looking for. Thank you. Someone in that kind of environment, I can absolutely see them saying, well, we've got these two Windows servers, which they're running an important Windows thing, and we'll leave them alone. But we've got these other two, which are basically only there to run SQL Server, but we're a bit more competent with Red Hat, so why don't we just spin up SQL Server on there? So you'll start to see a slow migration in that direction, I think. I don't think anyone who is currently in all Microsoft shop is going to go, hooray, now we can finally move to Red Hat because SQL Server was the thing that was keeping us there. But people in hybrid environments who are more comfortable on the Linux end of things, or they're happier with the administration tools for administering 50 Linux servers rather than 50 Windows servers, can now say, well, let's put the SQL servers on Linux.
I have to say that outside of just the fact that it runs on Linux and that's cool, the thing that really impresses me is turning the Microsoft ship around there is a lot of unsung heroes in that are responsible for this. I mean, you know, many people listening to this will work for big companies, know how hard it is to do things that are different. And what we're seeing at Microsoft is really impressive.
Not wishing to harp on at this too much, but what we're seeing from the Microsoft server and cloud team, who have done a really good job. No one else has turned around one iota, which really annoys me. But the server and cloud team are brilliant, absolutely.
I'd say that the VS Code thing is a pretty significant...
Well, that's VS Code, and now they bought Mono. So I think the developer side of the house also is starting. The desktop side is certainly not, but the developer side, I think, is starting to.
I'm reserving judgment on the Xamarin thing until I see what happens.
We should talk about that on the show.
I was going to say, this sounds like a segment to me.
Maybe we'll talk about it in the next show. Maybe we'll see. Let's see if we can. I mean, we probably can't because there may be... all kinds of
there'll be a bunch of stuff that Miguel and Nat can't talk about, probably.
But it'd be cool if we could maybe see if we could get Miguel or Nat on the show, or maybe some low ranking Zimian person that can get fired once they've been on the show for saying something horrendous.
I'll give Neil Patel a ring.
Yeah, I was gonna say, let's give him. Jason Rose works there as well.
Yeah, right? Jason,
Jason from Canonical.
Yes.
Yes.
Jason Rose works for System 76. Right, yes, anyway, but yes, so that was the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone. It was good time. Sorry Brian couldn't be here for the outro, but he had to take off and write some of the bullshit articles.
I don't... on the other hand, his bullshit article did do a whole bunch of research for the show, so that was excellent. Well done for multi-purposing.
Yeah, he's actually a pretty good writer.
I like the fact that he's managed to not only shill his article, but basically, as far as I can tell, he's being paid for doing bad voltage research. Nice. Wish I could swing that particular gig.
The man knows how to make lemons into lemonade. All right. All right, everyone. See you next time.